Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome, everyone, to the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove, and we're really close to our loyal listeners. Jason, the super producer, I talked to him today. More than likely, he'll be back for the next episode. He wanted to get back for this episode, but he had some stuff to take care of, and he couldn't get back for the time that we set to record this. So he's extra excited. He can't wait to come back and say hello to everybody and get in on a great conversation. So I just want to remind everybody that if you do have a story or a sighting that you want to share with us, you can find us on Facebook at the From the Shadows podcast. Find our forum page called After the Shadows. You can find me on Instagram at Shane Grove Author, or find us at the From the Shadows Instagram account. And last but not least, our website is working fine. Go to the contact page, send us an email. I'll get a hold of you. Or like our guest that we have today, I can hunt you down on Facebook when you post your story and ask you politely over and over again, will you please come on and tell the story, because it's so good. So I hope that once I bring our guest on, that you guys agree that that I knew what I was doing when I asked him to come on. So joining us today is Eric from Pennsylvania. Eric, thanks for joining us on the From the Shadows podcast.
It's my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
Now, Eric, so, you know, you want to give our audience, give them a little bit of a background of where you're at in Pennsylvania. I mean, don't give the exact location, because we don't, you know, we don't want people showing up and asking for autographs and trying to get pictures and stuff. But kind of give them the lay of where it is you're at, the land, the history behind it a little bit, and then let's kind of, you know, get into what happened.
Okay. It's central Pennsylvania. We're actually just below the actual center of the state. Penn State University is in Center County. We're the next county south. And it's a rural community, a lot of Amish around and everything. And the mountains run up through here. And the story takes place about 30 years ago. My older brother and I were coming to our family cabin up on the side of the mountain, and we brought our coon hounds up. It was I think January. And we decided to go out coon hunting. And we left the cabin and we were walking out through, and the dogs struck a trail and they were going down over the mountain. And they got down towards the bottom. There's an Amish farm there. And the dogs got quiet. They just stopped trailing and everything. So it was rumored that the Amishman had been stealing some dogs for his puppy mill. So my brother and I decided to creep down to the farm with our lights out. And as we went down through, we're standing on the road above this old farm. And we're watching, and we have our lights out, and we're just standing there quietly. And I see something move over by the house, and it started to proceed across from the house to my right. And I could see as it walked, I could see it was walking on two legs. I could see the arms swinging, and like I said, it was a fairly moonlit night. And as I told you when we were talking, I'm a pretty good-sized fella, between 6'3 and 6'4, and at that time, I was 300 to 350 pounds, and as we saw this going, it dwarfed me. It was much bigger than I am, and it continued to walk past the barn. At first, I thought it was the Amishman until I started seeing this, and it continued on past the barn, went down over a little grade into a pasture field, and as it got to the backside of the pasture, where it bordered another Amish farm and goes out onto a big power line. There's a 4 foot or so high barbed wire fence that this thing stepped over without breaking stride. It didn't crawl over it. It didn't separate the wires. It didn't jump over it. It never broke stride. We watched all this, and I didn't say anything to my brothers. I told you he enjoyed tormenting me when I was younger and was always trying to scare me. And a lot of times he'd scare himself.
And now, I got to stop you. Ask, how big is your brother?
He's smaller than I am, but he's still, what are you, Mike? Six, he's 6'1", and at that time he was probably around 220, 230 pounds.
So you're establishing right now that your brother is not very smart. Because if older or not, if he's tormenting a 6'4", 350 pound guy, then that, he just shows a lack of real judgment.
He learned a little bit as we got older. He did stop. By that time, he had stopped, but there was still that trend, and he got the point where he was scared himself. And, like I said, I can give you many examples of that, but they don't really involve Sasquatch. But I didn't want to startle him. Like I said, at this point, by walking by the road, we're about a mile and a half, 2 miles from the cabin. So I saw this thing go and it disappeared. And at this point we hadn't exchanged any words or anything. And the dogs, they opened on the trail back up over the side of the mountain. So I said, well, the dogs are up there. Let's head up towards them. As we turned to start going, my brother Mike says, did you see something back there? I said, like what? He said, I don't know what it was. He said, but it walked on two legs. And he said, it was a whole lot taller than you are. And he said, it just walked right out across there and stepped over the fence. And I said, yeah, I saw it. And his comment then was, I think, well, the dogs will find their own way back. I'm going to the cabin. We proceeded to come back up to the cabin, and we discussed it a lot. I mean, even knowing that I was going to do this podcast with you, he and I were talking about it, and 30 years ago, and I can still sit here and picture it in my mind. I'm right now, I'm where the cabin was at that point. I'm actually in a little different cabin that I'd built later, but I've not seen it before or since. I wish that I would have known the Amishman that was down there then and went and looked for footprints and stuff, but I did look the next day. The fence was all up. There was no gates in the fence, no opening in the fence. This thing stepped right over a 4 foot high fence. And you know, thinking back to this was not long after I'd gotten out of high school, and there had been a story circulating for quite some time before that about this Big Valley Monster. That, you know, people, it's legal to spotlight in Pennsylvania, go out at night, shine lights for deer, and people would do this, and then they would claim that they saw this thing. I'd never encountered it like that, but we did that night, and not long ago, my brother was actually talking to another person that just straight out the way that this thing was traveling, this man had built a house there, and the man is telling my brother that they were making fun of his granddaughter because she was in the upstairs of their house, and she told her grandparents that Bigfoot was in the driveway looking at her. And they're like, what do you mean? And she said, this big hairy being was standing out here looking at me through the window. And her grandfather thought it was funny, but, you know, my brother told him, we've seen something here. So that's another possible sighting, and that's only a few hundred yards from where we saw this.
And that sighting just happened, is what you're saying, right? Not that long ago?
Yeah, like a year or so ago.
Okay, all right. So at the time when you and your brother, so there had been talks about something being out there at night that people right. But that didn't, I mean, what'd you think back then? That was just a bunch of nonsense, a bunch of people making it up, or
we what? Actually thought it might have been somebody pulling a prank, you know, because there are certain areas, if was a story going around about an exceptional buck or something, people go shine these fields. And we thought maybe somebody's dressing up doing something. But the night that we saw whatever we saw, like I said, I told you before, I want to believe that Bigfoot's real. On the side of my cabin, I have all kinds of signs here. One says, warning, please do not feed the Sasquatch, and Sasquatch mating area, please stay on the trails. I make eye contact. But I would love to believe it. And I kind of wish it that whenever it happened that I would have turned the light on to see. But then that opened a whole other discussion. As I told you, I told my brother if it came after us, I would have had to kneecap him and let him to the Sasquatch.
Well, hey, listen, you got a Sasquatch down there checking out puppies for a snack. I mean, your brother would be a lot better meal. Let's be honest. So obviously that Sasquatch or whatever it was you saw was down there probably looking around where the puppies were.
It could have been. I mean, like I said, I saw it start from by the house. I don't know if there's a field behind the house. It goes down into a little pasture. There's old ancient stone walls around it, and there's another patch of woods behind it. I don't know if it may have been coming through there. I first saw it enter in my view like by the corner of the house, and it went over by the barn. And it wasn't like it was going at a great pace or anything, but it just was going with purpose. It wasn't like it was just looking around. It wasn't somebody trying to get in the barn or the house. It's kind of hard to describe, you know, looking at through the moonlight. And I didn't have a feeling of fear or anything. I wasn't fearful at the time. It was definitely something.
So do you feel like it even knew you and your brother were standing there?
I don't. We discussed that, and my brother said, well, you know, it probably should have been able to smell us but I don't remember what way the wind was blowing or anything. We were uphill from it, and it didn't look in our direction or anything for any length of time, as I recall. Like I said, we didn't shine our lights on it, wishing now that we kind of would have gotten a better look to see what we were dealing with, but think part of it was I just at first thought it may have been this guy trying to get our dogs, or was hiding the fact that he had our dogs, and we didn't want to disclose where we were, and until I realized that it was something extraordinary that it was kind of too late then.
So actually your dogs then were beyond the farm. Like, is that what you're saying? Or were they right there with you, or were they out of your sight and on the other side?
We hadn't seen them since we had turned them loose probably half an hour before that. They were doing a trail on a coon, and they got down. They went down over that power line I was describing, and that power line comes right up to the back of the farm, and they were in that general area whenever they got quiet. So they were in the area where we had seen the Sasquatch or whatever it was go over, and they came up through, and whenever they finally did come back to us, they weren't acting right, and they were kind of bristled up, and I don't know if you've ever, well, you said you're not a hunter or anything, but
I'm not a hunter, but I've heard enough stuff about coon dogs that it, once they get on a scent and are after something, it really takes something to get them off and get them.
Yeah.
Right. And, I mean, And they're fearless, right? I mean, they're fearless.
Yeah. And like I said, I've seen these, the particular dogs that we had at that time, they'd get around bears and stuff, and they would come back in after tussling with a bear, and they'd be all bristled up like this and stuff. And, it wasn't like they'd come in contact with anything, but you could tell that they weren't their typical selves. Something wasn't quite right with what was going on the mountain that night.
Wow. So you guys turned around and left, and then they ended up coming back. So they had to cross. So what do you think they went? And it's pure speculation. Do you think they got beyond that thing and heard it or smelled it or knew it was there and thought, oh man, we need to hunker down and be quiet or what?
I don't know. My first thought, like I said, I thought maybe this Amishman had caught them, which was kind of a stretch. It's typical. You don't just go up and get a dog on the trail. I don't know if they had lost the trail. Like maybe if the raccoon had gone in, sometimes they'll go in the ground instead of up a tree. But typically the blue tick I had at that time, she would have stood there and bayed in the hole until we went and got her. I don't know if they lost the trail. If there had been more than one going through at that time, whatever we'd seen, if the one we'd seen had crossed paths with them and they got out of there, I honestly don't know. And again, I'm recalling from 30 years ago. So,
well, I mean, listen, I mean, I think something like that probably, really, I mean, obviously it sticks with you there, you know, when you see something that you don't expect, you know, you have that kind of experience for sure. But you've never seen or experienced anything like that again then on the property. Has your brother or any of your other family members?
No, like I said, my brother spoke with the other man that lives down over the mountain and out further, that his granddaughter had seen something. The only other thing that I could say, it wasn't here, it was actually further north in Pennsylvania. We stopped at a sheet store. And we're standing there in the morning drinking coffee, and we see something moving up along the woods edge, and didn't think anything of it. It was kind of dark colored, and it was in the morning sunlight. But whenever we got in the truck then and we drove and we got up by this cornfield, we realized that whatever this was walking on the ground, and you could see it walking above the 6-plus foot high corn.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you guys could see that from the gas station and then drove up closer to where you saw it.
Well, we were about 300 yards or so where we saw this going, and we couldn't really tell what it was. And it was fairly early morning, but whenever we left, the road actually took us past where this thing was walking towards, and it went up in the woods, and we got up there and we realized how high this corn was. And we'd again seen something that, couldn't explain what it was.
Now you're a hunter and spent a lot of time outdoors. Could a bear have replicated what you and your brother saw from 300 yards away?
No, sir.
I mean, I like to, you know, when people say, well, I saw this bear running on 2 feet, I'm like, when have you ever seen a bear run on 2 feet?
Yeah, I've got pictures I can send you of a bear that came in here that I tied my bird feeders up at the cabin. They were 8 feet off the ground, and the bear stood there and pulled them down. But that bear didn't run. He stood up and pulled the bird feeders down. And they're the ones that I've seen that even try and move on their hind legs are very unsteady unless they're a circus bear, and they still don't run.
Yeah, and they don't walk through a cornfield.
No,
either.
And
yeah, that's wow. Yeah, I mean, because then you start eliminating like what makes sense. You know, like I realize everybody wants to kind of, just like you, the first night you saw and you're like, oh, that's got to be the Amish guy, because what else is out there walking around the barnyard on two legs? You know, it's when you realize that those boxes you're trying to check off start not to make so much sense. And the only thing that does make sense is that it's got to be maybe a Bigfoot, or maybe a Sasquatch. Because like you said, I mean, of stepping over a 4-foot high fence, I don't even know anything that can do that.
No. Like, that's one of the things that we discussed so many times. You know, we both saw it. We both said it, you know, it's like, man, that thing just stepped right over that fence. And I've crawled through lots of barbed wire. I've been hung up in barbed wire. This thing literally stepped over it. And I didn't go over with a tape measure and measured it at 4 foot, but it was well over a 3-foot fence because I've climbed over, straddled many of them by pushing them down. And this was, it was at between 3 and 4 foot tall.
Wow. So I want to kind of go down this road a little bit, because I know, because of our conversation before, you are a true man of God. You know the Bible, you know, your religious doctrine. How do you, looking back on this, how do you reconcile this with what, you know, maybe is in the Bible?
Well, if Sasquatch is real, Yeti, Sasquatch, whatever, Bigfoot, I believe that it is part of God's creation. It was created in the 6 days of creation, just like we and the other animals were. But there's a lot of things out there that people have said for years, you know, that didn't exist or were extinct, and things that they'd never heard of that they're finding now. I believe that if it's true that it is just part of creation, and my mother and I were talking earlier, and she's like, well, why wouldn't they find bones or something? I said, you know, I go out and I actually look for shed antlers off of white-tailed deer. And mm-hmm. if you get to know where the deer are traveling and stuff, and at the right time, you can typically get in there and find some sheds. But most of the ones that I find, you can see where squirrels and rodents and stuff were chewing on them. I've spent a fair amount of time in Africa, and I have a collection of African hunting books. I love the white age of the white hunter. You know, and there was always the legend of the elephant graveyard. Have you ever heard about that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
It's not true. We witnessed this last year whenever we were in South Africa, right outside of the one camp that we were at. There was a Cape buffalo had been killed by a pride of lions. And within 24 hours, there wasn't much of anything but some bones left there. I mean, a Cape buffalo, you know, is like a 2,000 pound or bigger, like bull.
Yeah. I mean, it's bigger than a steer on the farm.
Oh, yeah. They're 1,500 pounds or so. Is a big one, and it was gone like in 24 hours, except for some bones. And I can promise you go back here today, there's no bones there. And that's the thing. If you look at how many buffalo are in that park where we're at, Kruger National Park, is twice the size of Yellowstone, and you struggle to go through there in areas and find bones of animals, because God created his ecosystem and it works. And if there's, say, Pennsylvania had at one point over 1 million white-tailed deer, estimated population. Well, let's say that we had a population of a 1,000 Sasquatch. What are the chances that you're going to find bones of a Sasquatch if you think about all the more you ever see bones of a deer in the woods?
Well, I know. Well, the only place you really, I mean, my family has a pretty good sized farm, pretty good sized mm-hmm. woods. And just because I don't hunt, you know, you spend time out there, you just don't see deer. And there's deer. There's so many deer. There's so many coyote. You just don't see them. It's not like they're just laying around. See, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So your point is exact. And if we think these creatures are a little more intelligent than just your average, you know, animal running around out there, they may do something to hide or, keep their bones or their final resting place a little more secret, you know, a little more out of the way.
That's more common among the great apes and stuff. I mean, it's, you know, the closer you get to, I'm not an evolutionist by any stretch, but I believe that there are animals that God blessed with more intelligence than others. I've got some dogs that are smarter than some people I know. But it seems like that, you know, as you get into that, like, and especially with like the great apes, that they kind of live in a communal setting and stuff. Yeah, they mourn the loss of their family members and stuff. And yeah, I absolutely believe that Sasquatch, if he exists in the way that he does in my mind, that he could absolutely do that. And the chances of finding the bones and remains are slim. I mean, we're not in an arid region where you can have mummification and things dry out. I mean, they're going to go back into the earth.
Now, I also want to touch on, like, so the part of the Bible that talks about the Nephilim.
Uh-huh.
And I know people have, I've heard this, I've heard people go down that path, that they believe that that's what Bigfoot is, offspring of the Nephilim that were cast out and, you know, just roaming the earth, you know, on their own, basically, as abominations. I mean, does that make any sense to you at all?
If I was going to pick anything from the Bible, I would think that maybe they were from the line of the Edomites, because Esau is described as being hairy, and that's how Jacob deceived his father. Whenever he stole Esau's birthright, he went and took the fur off of a young goat and put on his hand, so that when his blind father would touch him, he thought that he was touching his brother. I believe the Nephilim are the ascendants before what we see with David and Goliath. You know, Goliath stood probably between 9 and 10 feet tall, very big man, but it was described as looking like a man. There's a lot of things that get pulled in with the Nephilim, because it says that the sons of man interbred with the daughters of God. And I think that was talking more about believers and non-believers personally.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it goes that route personally. That's me. I'm not going to debate with somebody else if they feel differently. But yeah, we definitely have the information in the Bible that tells us of these large beings. And even in here in Pennsylvania, I have there's a Pennsylvania author. His name is Jeffrey Frazier. He wrote a bunch of, we call them fireside tales throughout Pennsylvania. And he has stories and documentation of these beings in almost New York State, up in Potter County, that they had unearthed these skeletons of these men that were 9-10 feet tall, and they had horns that protruded straight out of their forehead and then turned like 90 degrees towards the top of their heads.
Holy moly. Okay. That's interesting for sure. I mean, and we've had Jim Vieira on, who is really into the giant skeleton mm-hmm. stories throughout North America and the world. And I mean, that's very interesting how some of that stuff seemingly has been hidden away. You know, they don't want present day people to know that that stuff existed here in North America for whatever reason.
Right.
Which I find, that's a whole nother rabbit hole to go down. But wow, that's interesting. Yeah. So would you, I mean, you've already kind of said, so I mean, do you do anything out there on the property to kind of maybe try to invite these creatures back or not? Or are you just kind of, if I see one, I see one?
Yeah, I actually live in North Carolina now, but I do keep a number of trail cameras out year round. But you know, I see that stuff come up a lot. People are like, well, why don't they get pictures of them with all these trail cameras and stuff? I don't have high dollar trail cameras, but a friend of my brother, younger brother's does. He does a lot of more professional type hunting. And he said that even at those cameras, that are like over $1,000 per camera to tie to a tree in the woods, that they only have like a 60% success rate at capturing things that go past them.
Really?
Yeah.
So that never gets brought up. You know what I'm saying? All the people I've heard discussing trail cam evidence, no one's ever said that the percentage of success rate is only 60%. I mean, you would think listening to people talk about trail cams, a fly couldn't fly by without it catching.
No. I have one spot up here where I set up two cameras at different angles, and they're both about the same distance away from where the animals normally come through, and the one will have twice as many pictures on every time as the other one.
Wow.
And they're the same brand of camera, you know, put new batteries in and everything at the same time. And like I said, that's with your high dollar cameras that are around 60%. These cheaper ones, like, I don't know what the success rate is on them.
Well, if you compare your two cameras, the one's 0% versus the other one, if it's got twice as, I mean, holy smokes. Yeah, I've never heard that. I've never heard that from the people that talk about trail cams, that they're really not that accurate.
Well,
or dependable.
I wasn't aware of it until my brother was telling me this. And like I said, his friend has some sponsors and stuff. He goes out in the Midwest and hunts. So they supply him with a lot of this gear and everything. And they were telling him that, you know, and of course the camera companies don't want to publish that data and say, you know, you've got a 25% chance of the buck of your lifetime walks by and you're going to maybe get a picture of him. You know, you only got a 25% chance that you're going to. This is like last year that he got these cameras. So it's not like it's the older cameras.
Yeah. Another thing just crossed my mind. Was there any point in time when you saw that thing that it crossed your mind that, man, maybe that is something I need to shoot and just to prove that it exists?
No. No, that we actually, my brother and I discussed that today, and we're sitting here on my porch, and I said, you know, one could walk by about 100 yards at the end of my driveway, go across the driveway and down the woods, and I said, as long as it's not trying to kill us or cause us any harm, I'm going to watch it go and try and get a picture of it. I don't believe in killing anything unnecessarily, but like you said, I'm a hunter. I hunt for meat. I'm not really a trophy hunter. I've hunted here in Africa and other places, and I enjoy it. I'm definitely on the carnivore side of the spectrum, and I would not want to cause any harm to anything unnecessarily.
I totally understand that. I mean, I've heard both sides of that coin. That, you know, because it doesn't sound to me like, I think the people that have had these experiences, like, you know, you saw something, you may not know exactly what it was, but you're confident in your knowledge of, I saw something that probably shouldn't have been there, that probably is hard to explain. I don't need to shoot one to prove it to somebody else.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Again, if you want to go back to scripture, you know, the Bible says you don't swear by anything. Don't make an oath in the name of God. Don't swear by the earth that's his footstool. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. So you should be known.
Exactly.
You should be known by your character that you're not going to tell a lie. And I mean, I enjoy telling stories and stuff, and even getting to the point, you know, whenever I was working with the youth in the church and stuff, to exaggerate the point or tell a tall tale. But I would not outright lie about something like this for any attention or, like I said, this is 30 years ago and it's still vivid in my mind. And we like to reminisce whenever we sit up here around a fire, and some of our friends know about the story, and they'll have their kids and be like, tell them the story about what you saw down the mountain here.
you said there's a big Amish population. I wonder, like, there's a big Amish population here not far from us, and we know they're pretty tight-lipped, you know, but some of them will every once in a while tell about an experience that they, you know, it's like, it's fact to them over in eastern part of Ohio. Like, if you really get one of those guys to talk, they'll tell you, like, oh yeah, we know they're out there, but they're not going to offer it up. So I wonder what the community, like the Amish community there, knows and
most
amongst
of the ones,
themselves.
Most of the ones that I've had any interaction with talking about that stuff, they won't just out of hand say no, there is or isn't. But a lot of them will tell you stories of things that they've heard. Another night coon hunting, we were actually on an Amish farm, and a friend of mine, probably one of the most fearless people I knew at that point in time, we were there and our dogs were running and heard this god awful wailing sound. And I mean, I've heard bobcats, I've heard most anything you can imagine out in the woods. And I looked at him, I said, "What was that?" And you could hear in his voice, I don't know. He said, but it didn't sound friendly. He said, "Let's get out of here."
Jeez.
Again, don't know what it was, but it was something that was alive by the sounds of it. And I mean, yeah, there's so much that goes on. And it's one of the things I try and tell people that say, well, why are you afraid of the dark? There's nothing in there in the dark. It isn't in the daylight. Well, yeah, there is.
Well, the people that were like, you know, so we're essentially the same age. So growing up, okay, I only thought this was like, you know, the Yeti was in the Himalayas. Uh-huh. Sasquatch or Bigfoot was only in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no way you thought. And so at that time, I probably when in the late 70s, early 80s, the Minerva monster was going on. Okay. So, but we didn't know that. I didn't know that. And that's not that far away from me. It's over like south of Cleveland. Okay. In Akron, Canton area. I had no idea that was going on. It was national news. Okay. Yeah. But they didn't come out and call it Bigfoot or Sasquatch or anything like that. They attached the word monster to it. And so then that kind of gives it, not that calling it Bigfoot or Sasquatch would have made it even more realistic. But, you know, anytime you put the word monster on something, you're like, oh, okay. It's probably make believe. But not till you get older and you start traveling up and down Eastern Ohio through Pennsylvania into West Virginia, do you really realize there's a lot of land where there's not a lot of people.
Oh, and yeah.
There's great big swaths of forest and hills. And I mean, we'll drive, we go to the Outer Banks on vacation. We go through Pennsylvania and West Virginia and I'll go, look at that hill. There's got to be at least one, you know, joking. I'm kind of joking, but I, at the same time, I'm like, there's either a Bigfoot on the side of that hill or there's a still. There's one or the other, maybe both, you know, it does not surprise me that those areas are, have so many reports of stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, for years around here, there were people that claimed that they would see mountain lions. And the game commission said, no, there's no mountain lions or, you know, this isn't true. And there's places around here named Panther Run Road, Panther Hollow and all this. And I was actually riding four wheeler here one day and I went down, I went to turn to go out this other road. And I heard something as I'd slowed down to turn and I hear the brush crashing and I see this black thing moving. I thought it was a bear. I started accelerating the four-wheeler to follow this bear. Well, this bear had about a 3 or 4 foot long tail behind it.
Ooh.
Okay. And my mother and father, they saw buckskin colored pumas or mountain lions here. You know, we had the Penn State Nittany Lions.
Yeah.
But the game commission claims, no, there aren't any around anymore. Well, they're all over the place that they're, Michigan is having problems with them now. And these things, I told my brother a story. My wife is from South Africa, and there's a rugby stadium in Johannesburg. Back in the 1980s, there was a mating pair of leopards that lived in this rugby stadium, and there were thousands of people coming there to rugby matches, and they never knew it.
That so, does not sound like a recipe for anything but disaster. like they... That sounds, that's crazy. Like,
yeah.
Wow. And they so it wasn't like 1,000 people going into their habitat of that's janitor's closet. We don't go in there. Well, yeah, don't go in there. There's leopards in there. They said.
And the thing of it is, you know, the animal rights activists and stuff, they got all up in arms about the leopard, saying they're endangered. Well, the leopard is the most widely spread large cat in the world. It comes from, goes from Cape Town, South Africa, clear to Siberia, and all points in between. You can find leopards. But they're hard to find. This was my second trip to Kruger when I was over. I've been in many other game reserves and places, and I wanted to see a leopard. Finally, I got to see one, and that actually made me think about the photograph situation. You know, we're saying, why are the photographs always blurry when people take pictures of Sasquatch? Well, I've taken tons of pictures of lions, and probably 90% of them are out of focus because you're trying to get a picture of something that's moving. The autofocus is in and out, and you snap a picture at just the wrong time. I go through my pictures, and I'll come back with 10,000 photographs when I go on a photo safari, and I might have 1,000 good ones if I'm lucky.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people that question that have never been out doing anything. You know what I'm saying? They're not versed in, you know, they certainly don't go hunting. I mean, like, I'm not questioning, like, you know, why haven't you shot more trophy bucks? Okay, because I'm not out there. I know how difficult it's got to be difficult. You know, it's the same thing with taking pictures. Like, I got to think, like, even if you'd have had a camera that night, would that have been the first thing you'd have thought of? I got to get a camera up and take a picture. I mean, I think that when you see stuff that is so stunning, that's the last thing you think of. And I know people are taking pictures and video of everything nowadays, and maybe the generation that is, you know, has been, you know, of 25-year-olds and not to bash 20, but I think maybe they would be, you know, if they were out looking for Bigfoot, they might be the ones to get a picture. Us old guys, I mean what are we thinking about taking, you know, like, we had to wind the film, like,
I've got a very, very nice digital outfit that my wife and I we're doing more traveling now, but her being from South Africa, I go over there, and you know, I've got up to 600mm telephoto lenses. And I can't tell you how many pictures I've taken of birds sitting that just at the last second, you know, something's not quite right. The camera's focused a little bit on something else. And you think, well, I got a decent picture, and then you look at it, and it's so out of focus. And then you've got something like that where you're going to be excited. You got an adrenaline rush, and it doesn't make me question at all. But my brother was just saying, you mind if he chimes in here for a second?
No, he can chime in. All right. Is he defending his intelligence? That's all I want to know, if he's going to do that.
He is smart enough not to do that. But here's Mike.
Hey. Hi. What I wanted to say was, with that night, saying about focusing and with cameras and stuff. Well, we both had lights, and me personally speaking, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Even though I had that light there, I could have easily turned it on and shined on it. It just wasn't registering at the time that I had that light. I could have turned it on, but I couldn't believe what I was looking at. I was looking at this thing, and I was looking at my brother. I looked back at this, and I was comparing sizes. And like you said, when it was walking out across there and stepped over that fence, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. So I kind of got respect for people that say, well, you couldn't, you know, when you watch these things on TV and you say, well, why wasn't the picture focused? Why is this? Because me, truthfully, what I was looking at just didn't register. And maybe if I did turn my light on, I didn't want to know what I was actually seeing.
Yeah, that's what I was at. Like it's stuck in your brain, you guys' memories, this long, just seeing it in the dark. So imagine if you I mean, if you, because if you shine your light on it, what's the first thing it's going to do? Turn and look at you.
That too, but we didn't have guns or nothing. We just had our lights with us. So what would we have done if we turned our lights on and it decided to come towards us?
Yeah, that's an interesting question for sure. I mean, like I know what your brother said he would have done, taking your knee out. And then he would have been telling the story about the time I left my brother. But how quick did you figure out it wasn't the, I mean, or did you not, like, I mean, like Eric, he thought at first it was the Amish guy. Did you think it was the guy that lived there, or did you know right away that there's no way?
From his porch was closed in, and as this thing was walking across in front of his porch, it was actually higher than the roof that was in an angle coming down. His head was a little bit taller than that roof. So you knew it was something large. But like I said, you couldn't really, I can't tell you if it had clothes on, if it was covered in hair. All I can truly tell you is that it was large. It walked upright. And I often thought about too, you know, people saying about gorillas and stuff. Well, gorillas might walk upright, but they kind of like sway their hips or kind of go into this thing walks like a human. You know, it was straight. It didn't like slunch over. I can't even tell you what I saw other than it was large.
Well, now are you, so you've never had another close experience or, heard anything or seen anything out of ordinary since then?
Years after that, where we saw it walk across the power line and into the woods, I've hunted many a times with my dog in that area after the experience. I've never come across it again. I've never seen nothing, never really heard nothing. I mean, I kind of look at it this way too. If you put a guy in a ghillie suit, how close can you get to him and see him and recognize him? I mean, it could be, if it's something that hairy and could be that quiet, how many times can you walk past it? I mean, we got bear in the woods up here, and you know they're here, but how often do you see them?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, and bear are trying to basically stay away from you too, right? So bear don't necessarily want to run into you any more than you want to run into them. So if you have something like this, I don't think they really want to run into you either from all accounts.
Nope. That's what I kind of think too. Like I said, I can't tell you exactly what it was other than it was very tall, very large, and walked upright.
Well, I hope that some night when you guys are sitting out on the porch, that you guys get another opportunity to experience that together. I mean, that would be kind of cool. Maybe, you know, it'd be another great story.
Yeah, it would. I'm back on here now. We've got a friend that he's into this stuff. I'm going to get him to subscribe to your podcast too. And he has his daughter interested in this stuff, but one funny kind of story to go along with it. While this stuff was all going on, we were in the cabin one night, and my brother has this mutant squatch cry that he does out in the woods. And we're in the cabin one night, it's after midnight, and we're sleeping, and we hear a vehicle, which was extremely odd at that time. These people came down over the mountain road that intersect with our driveway, and they were in a Jeep with the top off. And I guess they decided that it was a good spot to stop and take a urination break. And they get out and they shut the Jeep off, and we stepped out on the porch of the cabin. We could hear them talking and everything. And my brother does this call that he does, this squalling noise. And I hear one guy, "You hear that?" And the other's like, "What was that?" And about that time he does it again, and the guys jump in the Jeep and they take off, and there's two other guys that are chasing them trying to get in the Jeep because they left without them.
Jeez. You know, it sounds like you guys are troublemakers. That's what I'm getting out of this, is that you guys are.
We enjoy life.
Well, I wanted to ask you one more thing that you mentioned before we get off here, because so where you live now, you mentioned to me that there was some sightings, you know, because a lot of our listeners like to go and do some investigation and research on their own. What this thing called Nobby down in North Carolina? You want to give a little background on that, and maybe some of our listeners can go check that out.
Yeah, there's, like I said, not far from where I'm at is South Mountain State Park. He's been seen in that area down in towards Shelby, North Carolina. The last time I remember anything was a few years back on the local news. They encountered this person that said that Nobby came to their place quite often and come in and disturb things and everything. And it's kind of the typical thing you get in the South, like with the they go where when a tornado comes through, they go to the trailer park and look for the biggest redneck they can find. But this guy was standing there and he said, "Hey," he said, "Nobby come here all the time." He said, "I just go out and say, Nobby, you behave yourself and get," you know, like he talks to it like it's his buddy or naughty neighbor. But they have places that sell t-shirts and stuff that, you know, "I believe in Nobby. I've seen Nobby," and all this stuff. And it's, it seems to run in cycles that be a lot of reports for a while. And then all of a sudden you don't hear anything for the longest time. And then it starts up again. I've not had any experiences down there.
I'd be interested if any of our listeners from that area know of anybody or have had an experience with Nobby, because I had never heard. I've heard of a million different names. You know, there are, you know, a lot of regional names for Bigfoot and Sasquatch. You know, like we in Ohio, it's the Grassman. You know, in Florida, it's a skunk ape. You know, there's all kinds of different names for these creatures or what we think they are. So that was a new one on me, Nobby. So I'm eager to see if any of our listeners have experienced that or know anything about that. I'd love to hear about it. So
something else you can look into if you want. There's quite often there's reports over Charlotte of pterodactyls flying.
Around Charlotte?
Yeah, it makes the news. Yeah, there are people talk about seeing pterodactyls flying over Charlotte. You can just put in pterodactyl Charlotte in Google and you'll get all kinds of hits.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard that. Okay, I'll have to check that out for sure. That's one thing I always, you know, because we did hear a lot of reports about in West Virginia, you know, pterodactyl-like creatures. And I totally think that in those like hollers, you could, if something survived all those years, okay, from the ice age or whatever, that'd be a good place to do it. You know, hiding out in the caves and, you know, stuff like that. Oh man. Yeah. I'd love to hear from an eyewitness of a pterodactyl. I wouldn't even. Yo, talk about your mouth hanging open. Holy smokes.
I thought it was a joke when I first heard about it. I started looking and they have these reports quite often, and I've not seen it, you know, myself, but I would definitely like to.
Yeah. I mean, those reports, there's a lot of reports from out in the Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, kind of that area too, about those kind of, you know, they call them thunderbirds or, but I think, you know, I think what they may be seeing is a pterodactyl type creature. So, yeah, you know, kind of a land of the lost kind of deal.
Yeah. We went out west. We did a 8,000 mile tour around the country in 2020. And I can believe that there's things out there that man hasn't seen or hasn't seen man. I mean, you look at driving for the one place, I think we're in New Mexico, and I could see a light. It was like in the pre-dawn, and you see a light in the distance, a stationary light, and I looked at the odometer until I got to that light. It was like 30 some miles that we had driven. You can see a long way. There's lots of territory out there.
Yeah, and a lot of nothing in between, probably, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Eric, hey, I am glad I ran across your story on the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Project, and all of our fans who listen. I mean, that Pennsylvania Bigfoot Project page on Facebook is a great resource for eyewitness sightings. And I'm glad you shared your experiences on there, and I could get you to come on and tell them, because I think where you're coming from, you know, and your experience as a hunter, and then, you know, being a man of faith, I totally, you know, love your angle of what it is you experienced, and you know, how resolute, you know, you're like, this is what I saw, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's and especially the hunt, being a hunter aspect, it gives you another perspective of detail, you know, some of the detail that you guys picked up on. So I appreciate you and your brother jumping on there and sharing the story.
Well, it was our pleasure, and I thank you for what you do. And they said, I've got your contact here. I'll send you a picture of some of my signs that are hanging on the wall of my cabin here.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That would be awesome. And I hope you and your brother one night are out there on the porch hanging out, and you guys get a second opportunity to run into the big fella for sure.
Yeah, too. In fact, it was funny. We used to talk about this all the time. And the one guy that used to come up here hunting with us, whenever I built the new cabin where we're at now, invited some of our old hunting buddies up for burgers and stuff one night. And I'm grilling burgers, and the one guy came with his two boys, and one boy said to me, he said, "I don't know why," he said, "but Dad told us not to talk about Sasquatch here."
Because he doesn't want you guys telling your story to the kids.
Bro. I honestly think he was afraid that he was going to be handled by Sasquatch or something at one point, because he wouldn't go. The old cabin had an outhouse and everything. He wouldn't go to the outhouse after dark.
Hey, I got to be honest, Sasquatch or none, I'm not sure I'm going to the outhouse after dark either. So
I love the woods in the dark. That's one of the things that being in South Africa, staying there in the park, you'd be sleeping in a tent and you hear the lions roaring. And I like the woods. I haven't found any yet that I'm truly afraid of, but there's things I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, I think that's the way it probably should be. So, well, Eric, I appreciate it. And I can't wait for our listeners to hear this episode. So thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. You have a blessed evening.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out. Only know what's hiding in that shadow. God only knows what's hiding in that shadow. What's hiding in that shadow.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up.
CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.